Hello, I'm Linor Mudu. Welcome to Health Chat. Many students around the world are now returning to school after the summer break, but this year's back to school looks very different for families, schools, and educators as the world is still grappling with the COVID-19 pandemic. As schools worldwide struggle to reopen safely, the latest data from the WHO and UNICEF Joint Monitoring Program revealed that 43% of schools around the world lack access to basic hand washing with soap and water in 2019, a key condition for schools to be able to operate safely. This puts them at an increased risk of COVID-19 and other transmittable diseases. More than one-third of these children, about 295 million, are from sub-Saharan Africa. The report identifies several resources necessary for COVID-19 prevention and control in schools, including the use of personal protective equipment, cleaning and disinfection, as well as providing access to clean water, hand washing stations with soap, and safe toilets. An education advocacy group has a solution on how to return students safely back to school amid the coronavirus pandemic. Move the classroom outside. Sharon Green-Dank is the CEO of the nonprofit organization Green Schoolyards America, based in Berkeley, California. She explains the initiative.
So the National COVID-19 Outdoor Learning Initiative sees outdoor learning models as the new plan A. We're trying to help schools and districts think about how they can come back and have learning outside as their first choice, and then go online and inside when they need to. So in this model, they would be outside when the weather is suitable, and then whenever they determine for their own climate that it's not, they would go to the backup plan of being online or inside. I think all crisis response for the COVID pandemic is expensive, and there are schools around the country that are investing in plastic dividers and special equipment and ventilation systems inside their building, and those are vastly expensive. And what we're thinking of doing outside is really, on the whole, much cheaper. And it can include really simple infrastructure like adding straw bales for seating, which are $10 each. Not every classroom needs a shade structure. When they do, those are a bit more expensive, but they are far, far cheaper, just a fraction of the cost of buying a portable classroom and putting it on your school ground. Outdoor learning is a time-tested approach to having schools open during a pandemic. It was used in the Spanish flu and tuberculosis epidemics 100 years ago, when a lot of schools just moved their indoor classroom furniture outside and had class outside because they knew that the fresh air would reduce the spread of the disease. And so we are, if they did it 100 years ago, we can do it now.
We asked your thoughts on schools reopening during the coronavirus pandemic. How concerned are you? Here is what some teachers and students in Abuja, Nigeria, shared with VOA's Owal Saheu.
Yes, I'm concerned because they might meet with people who might have it. We don't know where they have been from, so you might get in contact with it. But in the school, they are provided, there have been provisions to wash your hands. You're not allowed into the gate without your face mask and your hand sanitizer. And as you're getting to the gate, you're checking your temperatures and your seating arrangements. You are far away from each other.
I'm not really concerned because the school has put in place several safety measures to prevent students from contacting the virus. Like, there's temperature check before you enter the school. You sanitize, you wash your hands before you enter your class, and you social distance.
Yes, I'm really concerned about contacting the COVID-19 because there might be a possibility of someone having the virus here in school, and then safety measures I take to avoid the COVID-19. As soon as I get home, I wash my hands and have my bath to avoid spreading the virus.
Yes, I am scared of contacting the coronavirus. I don't spread it to my family at home. And my school has provided facilities for us to wash our hands as we enter school. We are to always use our face masks. Observe social distancing and use our hand sanitizers. And at the gates, we are asked to take our temperatures.
Yes, as a school, we are very concerned about the safety of our students. And because of that, we've been able to put certain measures in place. For instance, we have washing hand basins placed at strategic points for both students and teachers to wash their hands regularly while here in the school. And apart from that, we have also been encouraging both students and staff to ensure that they wear their face shield or face masks, and also use hand sanitizers at intervals as they move around.
COVID-19 has been a major concern, not only in Nigeria, but in the world at large. I want to say, as a parent and a school administrator, it had been a major concern. Thank God we are now back to school. The NCDC safeguards have been put in place before the resumption of students in the exam classes back to school. Like, the school had been fumigated, decontaminated, and the students had been enlightened on the safety measures, keeping a social distance and then washing of hands and the use of sanitizer and the face mask. Just as you can see, as you entered into the school, there was infrared thermometer which is being used to take the temperature of every child in the school.
While some students are returning to in-person learning, many are taking their classes online or participating in a model that combines virtual education with in-person attendance due to COVID-19. For more, I spoke with Dr. Esther Ngubi, assistant professor at the University of Illinois.
Dr. Esther Ndumi, thank you so much for joining us on Voice of America.
Thank you. You're most welcome.
The coronavirus pandemic has been ongoing for several months now. We've seen the devastation in Africa, here in the United States, and around the world. And the virus is showing no signs of slowing down. What is your take on what we are seeing?
So I think, yeah, definitely it's looking like actually cases are increasing. And so everyone, you know, including university faculty members like us, are all worried. And but I think also research is really progressing at a fast speed. So we might expect, you know, solutions, vaccines in the near future. So I think, yeah, while we see the cases rising up, there is hope that our science and research will quickly catch up. And I think also people are taking in as much guidance from CDC and public health officials and using that everyday information to guide effectively really stop the spread of the virus.
So until we get there, until we get to a vaccine, until we get to a cure, a treatment that is recognized globally, there is a new normal. We have to adapt. We have to adapt to this new reality of COVID-19. And one of the things that we are seeing is the fact that countries have reopened, whether it's progressively or it's entirely. One such reopening has been schools. Schools were closed for a long time, and then now they are reopening. There is a school year that is starting, already started in some countries. What is the impact of this pandemic on what we have observed when it comes to the school system in general?
First of all, it really put on hold and allowed us to even stop and rethink about the university system. And I still remember back in March when actually the pandemic started, I was teaching a class, and we soon had to quickly turn everything online. And this actually forced us to reimagine education, to reimagine teaching, because all of a sudden we had to adjust to teaching online. And of course, some of the subjects, especially a science, for example, I'm a scientist, that was hard because, yes, you can teach other subjects offline and online, but it's hard to reconstruct science. And of course, we had, you know, education, I mean, the foundation of education is built on that being, you know, face-to-face teaching. And all of a sudden, we had to just get everything online. So there was a lot of changes that had to happen, and had to happen real fast. And everybody else, this was a new normal, because I've taught and I've always taught face to face. So just that quick readjustment was something. And, you know, it was not only, you know, the U.S. universities, it was around the world, including African countries. And there's been a lot of changes that have had to be made, right from undergraduate teaching, research, to even master's, PhD. And a lot of graduate students had to defend their theses and dissertations online. They had to rethink of experiments that either were near to be completed. And so there's a lot of things that had to happen, a lot of readjustments. And of course, like every other college town, and it's the students that make college towns to be alive. It's students. And so their absence in our communities and around these colleges was felt. Of course, it meant that it had an indirect impact on businesses, on, you know, all the other life that goes on and that is tied to indirectly to having students around.
In other words, are you also saying that academically the students' learning will be affected? Does it mean that the performance will diminish somehow, or they can quickly adjust? Drawing from your experience, what can you tell us?
So I think it's, I would put it in a two-way answer, in part because, yes, we've all adjusted, and students quickly adjusted. Came online, they attended. I remember just all the students came back to class. We had our online teaching. And so people have adjusted, faculty, students, and everybody else that makes universities and colleges dynamic and vibrant. But it's also been hard. And as I said, you know, I became a teacher, a faculty member because of that face-to-face. I mean, you cannot reconstruct the face-to-face discussion in class, the presence of students in class. You can't reconstruct that offline. And so it's really taken the beauty of teaching, the vibrancy of teaching, the dynamic nature of teaching, and this one, you know, face-to-face interactions in the classroom, which I know technology can try, but it's hard. So that has been the one thing that has been hard to adjust. Hopefully we will figure out how to be more dynamic, how to really reconstruct the in-person classrooms into online teaching.
So now that not every school, not all schools are going online, some schools are going back, one of the major questions for whether they are teachers or students or parents alike is, how do students go back to school safely during a pandemic?
That's a great question. And of course, for example, our university is opening next week and everybody is worried, and we've already had universities that have opened, and it's very difficult. It's a difficult situation because it's hard, and especially a disease that quickly spreads, and a disease that just that sociality of students coming back, they've been away from the campus, so they're excited to see each other, and maintaining social distance could be an issue. So it's a real risk, but I know that universities are taking as much caution as they can. For example, in our university, we actually have to test twice a week, and it's mandatory.
Is this for faculty or students?
Faculty and students alike. So if you really have to be in the university, yes, you will have to test twice a week. And if you don't test, then your ability to get into a classroom will be that privilege will be taken away.
Okay.
So at least there's that is giving us reassurance that we can be able to quickly know when somebody is infected, then they don't have to come to the classrooms. So those are some of the extra steps that we are taking. And I know many universities are instituting policies, a lot of policies to ensure that we at least can maintain a social distance. We can maintain at least all the outlines that are given by CDC. But the good thing also, most of the universities are also going to close early. So it's only going to happen. Our semester runs until November, and then we will end in person classrooms. Secondly, also the classrooms are a little bit smaller so that we can allow for social distancing. And so, and a lot of the huge classes, like thousands, are not happening. And or if they happen, they are so much staged. So for example, you can have only 50 students in a classroom. And I know that our facilities are really upgrading the cleaning and everything. It is hard, and only time will tell.
It is time for a short break. When we return, we'll have more of my discussion with Dr. Esther Ngubi, assistant professor at the University of Illinois, as she elaborates on school reopening in Africa. Don't go away. We'll be right back with more of our conversation. Welcome back to Health Chat. If you are just joining us, today we are exploring how school can reopen safely during the COVID-19 pandemic. Here is more on my discussion with Dr. Esther Ngubi, assistant professor at the University of Illinois.
So you are speaking, of course, you being in the United States, so this experience is what you are sharing from this perspective. But when we talk about the dispositions in Africa, in some African countries, we won't generalize, but in some African countries, what types of dispositions do you know that are being taken? For example, in Kenya, where you're from, what is happening on that front?
So in Kenya, for example, all the schools are closed. And I think while you can look at it and say, wow, you know, this is not a good thing, especially for students that need, you know, 5 months away from school. That's a lot of time. You know, the students need to socially continue learning. But at the same time, when you think about Kenya and many African countries, we don't have that technology and that ability to be quite up to date with the testing and with all the mandatory guidelines that really can slow down the spread. So I think that was a good decision based on just the fact that not many schools do have the facilities to clean their clean, to ensure that students are clean. And, you know, so in the best of interest, and then when you think about technology, not everyone has ability to access, you know, Zoom. And so to ensure that no one is left behind. So Kenya as a country decided, you know, that's it. The school year is done. We will resume in 2021. However, I know we have, you know, countries like Tanzania, they're still open. So I think it also depends. And you know, I think also like South Africa, universities are open. So it's differing by the different countries. And I think you're very right, not generalizing. I think based on how their capabilities and their infrastructure. And so taking all those guidelines into consideration. But of course, I know that, you know, countries will change if, you know, if we need to shut down again systems. I think one thing that I'm really just happy about is that countries are taking in the data and they're taking in guidance and they can shut down and reopen again when need be.
So as a scholar, what would you suggest if you were to advise, for example, a minister of education was listening to this interview, and then you have places where distance learning is not possible because whether it's access to internet or electricity or the technology or for various reasons, but then students are still not going to school physically. What would you suggest as an alternative, as a way for these students not to learn, to lose so many years, I mean, so many months of learning? What would you say can be done?
So that's a very good question. I think, first of all, I think this gives us an opportunity as African countries to first invest in infrastructure. I think, first of all, you know, to all the countries, the African countries that are listening, and the, particularly the Ministry of Education as the leaders, I think we can use this time to really upgrade our infrastructure and to ensure that even within the rural areas, we have centers, central areas where we can have hotspots. Okay, it may not be possible to spread internet across the entire 54 countries, but we can ensure that, for example, Kenya or Tanzania or Uganda. So in these different areas, we have a hotspot area. And there, you know, there can be probably, I think we can get creative. We should be able to get creative to ensure that, you know, students do not lose all this time. I am a lifelong learner. I believe in gaining new knowledge every day and ensuring that no one is left behind during this pandemic. And so it's very important for countries to get creative. We have cell phone. We have, so, and each family has a cell phone. How can we ensure that there's access, even the least, a lean curriculum that is spread across? Radio too, radio, I remember listening to Voice of America radio. So radio lessons, at least ensuring that there's something. TV, so ensuring that all the channels that are available at the moment can be utilized. Because if not a radio, if not a TV, at least I know every family, they will have access to at least one of them. Sending mail, any alternative that can creatively be used to ensure we still using different levels. We have high school students, we have university students, ensuring that we can use everybody that's, for example, in a community, there is, teachers that are sitting at home doing that. How can we ensure that, that knowledge, everybody based on their just level of knowledge can share around their knowledge systems? Then they have, so I think we can get creative. And we can also use this moment to build our infrastructure.
Okay. So then what would you say as the lessons learned from this pandemic, Dr. Ndubi, the way we learn, the way we teach in general?
First of all, I think, the pandemic has really given us time to, reimagine. I think this is a new opportunity, and especially so for, I think, for African countries and for the entire, actually, university system and college education system to rethink and to diversify. I think first of the lessons is diversify and ensure that we actually utilize everything. Hybrid model, where there's online, there is in-face classrooms. And on top of that, we are using creatively all the options that are out there, radio, TV. Truly, I think this is a moment of reimagining a new kind of education system where no one is left behind, where we actually utilize everything and all the technology that's available, where we close in the digital divide to ensure that everybody can have access to at least internet. I think for now it's clear that internet is a right. It is something that we should all have. And so building all our systems for that. And I think, we truly, it's a time to reimagine and to use this moment to rebuild an education system that leaves no one behind, and especially so to the people that live in the rural of the rural areas where, they've always been left behind. At the same time, I've appreciated online technology because now I open it up. I can open my teaching to people so that not only the students that I teach, but students around the world can have, knowledge of what. So I think the one thing that I really, the positive thing is that we've at least been able to open up knowledge. If we tap on this moment, I'm just actually excited about education, being able to open up for everybody and somebody can enjoy, the classes that I teach to our students at Illinois. Like somebody in Mauritius can tune in and say, yeah, that's what they're learning. So I think that's exciting.
That's exciting. I can see your excitement there, Professor Esther Ndumi. So turning this challenge into an opportunity, so no one gets left behind. We thank you so much for joining us today, Professor Esther Ndumi. Thank you so much.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much. And thank you, Voice of America.
That was Dr. Esther Ngubi, Assistant Professor at the University of Illinois here in the United States. Now, the ongoing closure of schools in Kenya due to the spread of COVID-19 has become a major source of concern and uncertainty among students, teachers, and parents. Kenyan authorities dashed hopes of many when officials announced recently that schools, universities, and other learning institutions won't reopen until next year. From Nairobi, VOA's Ruben Kiama reports.
Kenyan officials say most learning institutions are not prepared to reopen as cases of the global pandemic continue to rise. Wandia Njoya is an education expert and a senior lecturer at Daystar University.
The problem with the Kenyan situation is that we refuse to build infrastructure for schools, and over the years we have been failing about 80% of our children, and that has not been an issue because we've been glorifying the few who pass. So now COVID has forced us to reckon with the fact that we are dealing with a dysfunctional education system. So I wasn't surprised, really.
The decision to reopen learning institutions in January means all students will be required to repeat their current classes then. While some students have been taking virtual classes, many worry about the future, as student Dorcas Chepkirui explains.
In my case, I have online lessons. There is a minimum support from the people around me, and there's also no physical contact with my fellow students to share the struggles with. So it's very frustrating being introduced to new units and subjects that you've never encountered before on your own. It's really frustrating.
Learning institutions in Kenya were ordered closed on March 15th as COVID-19 spread quickly. Professor George Magoha is Kenya's education secretary.
Should conditions change according to advice from health, then something else may happen. But nevertheless, the government is in the process of inspecting all schools and ensuring that those schools are capable of complying with their COVID-19 regulations. There's no apologies for locking up schools in order to safeguard the children of Kenya.
He says the government is considering some $65 million in concessionary loans to private schools to cushion them from the effect of the pandemic. Private school owners have been lobbying for government support to help sustain their schools and pay teachers. The Education Ministry is supporting public schools and their teachers, but many teachers in private schools have had to turn to other jobs to eke out a living. Njoya says the education system that demands students complete the syllabus while at home is not practical.
I would have preferred to see something like more reading, creative activities, so that you're keeping kids occupied with creative activities and building their language and communication skills, so that when you come back in January, it's faster for the kids to catch up because they are relaxed now and they can think better.
Kenya has registered over 30,000 COVID-19 infections with more than 480 deaths. Ruben Chama, VOA News, Nairobi.
That's it for this edition of Health Chat. We thank our guests who joined us, Dr. Esther Ngubi, Assistant Professor at the University of Illinois here in the United States. For the latest news and coverage on the coronavirus pandemic, visit voanews.com. Check us out at facebook.com/voahealthchat, and let's keep the conversation going. Thank you all for joining us, and special thanks to all our affiliate stations throughout Africa for carrying Health Chat. I'm your host, Lenor Mudu, in Washington, with producer Dan Brown. Until next time, take care, stay safe, and wash your hands more frequently, and strive to make every day a healthy day.